developers, and we have very little influence in the process. In the early 60s, the Paddock Mansion was almost, it was in a state of disrepair. It was almost torn down by developers. It was all, it was the community activism that saved it. Division Street is highly overdeveloped, and that oops by city planners and developers has irrevocably altered that neighborhood. There's no going back once these oops policies are enacted. We can't allow that to happen in the village. When is enough enough for big money developers? With current zoning, limited parking, traffic congestion, and proposed upzoning, the very qualities of charm, quaintness, and character we all moved to the village for will soon vanish. We're neither oblivious to nor opposed to the growth in the village. It looks like a few developers interested in making large amount of money at the expense of neighborhoods have more influence at City Hall than we do. We believe that our request for a 35-foot height on buildings, neighborhood corridor designation, one-on-one parking, and land use language that prevents the demolition of affordable housing is reasonable and doable in Multnomah Village that we loved yesterday, today, and hopefully tomorrow.
Thank you very much. Welcome.
Hi. My name is Alan Kirkland, and I'm here primarily just to lend support to my fellow yellow shirt people.
Sorry.
Carla went out to check on something.
Here she comes.
Oh, okay.
It's the timer.
Oh.
I'll take it personally. Go ahead.
Okay, well, I'm here to lend support to them, and I don't have a prepared statement, but I have noticed my work takes me all over the state, Washington and Oregon, and I visit a lot of the little towns, up every single town practically in the last 30 years, up and down the corridor, the coast, all over. And what I notice in these little towns is you have a beautiful little, not all of them are beautiful, some of them are ugly, but you do have, you know, little historic districts. And then you have the strip that bypasses it, and the strip is good to drift Jiffy Lube your car, go to Walmart, and get a burger. But if you want to enjoy the town and, you know, people don't travel across the state to go to Ashland to visit the strip to Jiffy Lube their car. They go to Ashland to visit downtown. They go to Port Townsend to visit downtown. And while these are small towns, Portland is a group of small towns that has gotten big over the years. And places like Multnomah Village, Selwood, you know, a half a dozen other places in this city. So in the comprehensive plan, I just encourage, since you are the people in power, to take that into consideration. I thought Jean-Claude's point was very well taken, that they are protecting places in Europe, and I think we could take do it in their style. So, again, thank you very much.
Thank you. Thanks very much. Welcome.
Thank you. Thank you for the opportunity to speak today. My name is Bernine Bond. I live in Multnomah Village and have lived there for the last 35 years. I'd like to urge City Council to reconsider the designation of Multnomah Village as a neighborhood center. It is much more appropriate as a neighborhood corridor as defined by the proposed comp plan. I'd like to point out some reasons for this. First, drastically increasing the density in our neighborhood will create some serious traffic and safety problems. Many of the streets in our area are unimproved and they're not maintained by the city. Few side streets have sidewalks. When cars are parked on both sides of the street, the remainder is a single lane width that pedestrians share with traffic. Rather than encouraging the residents to walk, which is a goal of the comp plan, increased side street traffic and parking will actually discourage walking. Capitol Highway already has backups. And it's limited to two lanes with no realistic possibility for widening it. There are no bike greenways. TriMet service is limited. Hoping that the money to develop adequate infrastructure will just somehow materialize or that residents will not own cars can't be considered serious planning. Second, Multnomah Village is an iconic neighborhood that is beloved throughout the city. The scale of redevelopment that will inevitably occur in the village will destroy the charm and human scale. Part of the allure of the village is that its historic downtown evokes a simpler time. Certainly there is room in the city the size of Portland to keep such a historic neighborhood intact. Third, Multnomah Village has some of the more affordable housing available in the city, such as small rental homes and older apartment buildings. New rentals will almost certainly be market rates, which are unaffordable for many. Increasing rental rates in the neighborhood will push older rentals to remodel and increase their rents. We'll lose affordable housing stock. Lastly, I would urge the council to take a pause in the comp plan overall. The plan is complex and seems to try to fit the neighborhood into the plan rather than the plan into the neighborhood. We celebrate Portland as a city of neighborhoods. It would be tragic to lose that because of inflexible planning.
Thank you very much. Thank you all.
Just a quick comment on the affordability issue. My wife and I bought our house in Multnomah Village for $375,000 3 years ago, and I just checked on Zillow, and Zillow claims it's now worth $525,000. So that's not the result of evil developers doing anything. That's just a result of a hot housing market and a lot of people wanting to live there. So the affordability is going to be affected by supply and demand, not just what kind of development is allowed.
I would agree, although what I would say is we still have rental property that's reasonable in Multnomah.
And there still are $350,000 homes, which Portland says itself is the mean is the mean price for buying a home. And when you replace these $340,000 small homes with $600,000 to $800,000 homes on the same what was the same lot, that's where some of the inflation. And yes, we understand it's all market driven. That's a given. But not all of those houses are worth $500,000. Now, there still are $340,000 homes, which, Portland, you say that's the mean purchase price.
Yeah, it is. Thank you. Thank you very much. Okay?
Three are Stuart Reynolds, Stuart Rounds, Allison Reynolds, and Chris Eikamp, 22, 23, and 24. And they'll be followed by Paul Van Orden, Ted Masico, and Noah Kleinman, 25, 26, 27.
Good afternoon. Welcome.
Thank you, Mayor Hales, Commissioners. My name is Stuart Rounds. The 2035 Comprehensive Plan is critical for guiding and shaping development in the next 20 years. Getting the plan and the accompanying zoning right should result in sensible development and redevelopment that allows Portland to accommodate growth, but do so in a way that improves upon some aspects of our beloved city and preserves those characteristics that are most dear to its population. Portland is a city of distinct neighborhoods, and I see that the comprehensive plan acknowledges that one size does not fit all, and that it is important to have policies and regulations that protect the qualities that people value about these neighborhoods. That's great. But have we really taken the time to identify what it is about Portland and its neighborhoods that make them special? Well, of course, given my yellow shirt, I live in Multnomah Village in southwest Portland, and I love the fact that the village is a distinct and historic neighborhood that feels like a small town. In fact, it's that quaint, charming, and small-town vibe with local small businesses that's so highly valued by village residents and visitors alike. And I have here the signatures of 1,809 people, as well as almost 700 individual comments testifying that these small town characteristics of Multnomah Village are worth preserving, and that allowing four-story or higher buildings in the village core, as allowed in the comprehensive plan, would destroy the character of the village. Indeed, one size does not fit all. So I'd encourage everyone to take the time to determine what is special about our neighborhoods, then craft policies and regulations that recognize, promote, and preserve those characteristics while still allowing for sensible development. And for Multnomah Village, improvements to the comprehensive plan might include the use of CM1 rather than CM2 zoning, designation of the village as a neighborhood corridor rather than a center, and the adoption of a planned district for the village. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Welcome.
Hi. I'm Chris Eikamp. I'm the vice chair of the Hossford Abernathy Neighborhood Association, and I'm wearing Hossford Abernathy blue.
It's come to this. We have color.
Okay. There are three sites in hand we would like to comment on. The first is People's Co-op on 21st, along with the adjoining garage. There's Palio's Cafe on Southeast Ladd and the Northwest Naturopathic Clinic on Southeast Clinton. All of these sites are completely surrounded by residential properties and are themselves zoned residential. They have all been in longstanding commercial use and so enjoy a nonconforming status. Planning staff has recommended that these three properties be given a commercial designation in the comp plan. The hand board opposes this change. The nonconforming status of these sites provides protections to the surrounding residential properties, such as limiting the permissible hours of operation, providing a mechanism for review if there is a change of use. We have heard from residents And these protections are important to maintaining existing character and livability of the neighborhood. Changing the comp plan designation and zoning to commercial would remove these protections. The businesses of these three sites are good neighbors, but each has had issues over the years, whether it was noise, odors, parking, or early morning deliveries. It was the conditional use status that brought the businesses to the table to resolve the conflict with neighbors. Our concern is that these sites, along with those similarly situated around the city, which are embedded in residential areas, represent a high potential for conflict, and with a commercial designation, a future business at one of these sites would lose the incentive to engage with its neighbors and resolve any issues that might arise. The other issue we wanted to raise was one of process.
Interrupt you for a second.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
And you say they've been proposed as commercial. They've been proposed as mixed use or?
CM1, I believe.
Okay, so that's a mixed-use designation. So it's a little different than the old commercial designation.
Yes, okay. But the effect is the same, that it removes the mixed-use. I mean, it removes the non-conforming, the protections the non-conforming use currently offers to the surrounding residential areas.
Okay, I guess I haven't understood that part. Thank you.
No, okay, thanks for asking for the clarification.
That's the point I hadn't understood before.
Okay. The other issue we wanted to raise was one of process. You're poised to make decisions that will have a profound effect on people's homes, businesses, and properties. By changing the zoning of a parcel, you affect those that surround it. Notice to the affected parties throughout this process has been too limited, too general, and too late. The neighbors of a parcel whose zoning is changing will never get any notice at all, even if their existing protections stand to be removed. We feel it is simply wrong to make these sorts of sweeping and far-reaching changes without a more robust effort to notify all affected parties early in the process so they can have a meaningful input, meaningful opportunity to provide input. Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks very much. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. I'm Allison Reynolds with Rodler White, Parks and Alexander, and I'm giving testimony today on behalf of Scanlon Kemper Bard Companies, LLC. We submitted written testimony on this issue as well on November 6th. SKB is under contract to purchase the former Pico Manufacturing Headquarters site located on Southeast 17th Street. The site is along the new Max Orange Line and near the Southeast 17th and Holgate Max Station. The property is zoned IG1 currently with a comprehensive plan designation of industrial sanctuary. We are requesting that you change its comprehensive plan designation to mixed employment, which is consistent with EG employment zoning. Pico abandoned the site as its manufacturing headquarters and moved its operations to Clackamas County because the property has outdated infrastructure and was not ideal for manufacturing operations. SKB wishes to redevelop the space with lighter industrial maker uses that do not fit well within the city's current definitions of industrial use because they require typically a lot of office space. An example of this is a 3D printing operation where the office space is larger than the actual manufacturing space, and so under the code currently it would not be considered industrial. Makerspace is allowed in the EG zones. EG zoning for the property would allow employment-focused uses that maximize the city's investment in the new Orange Line. One of the PICO buildings is also on the city's historic resources inventory, and SKB wants to preserve and rehabilitate that building. This will be possible with later maker uses, but not feasible with redevelopment as heavier industrial use. So therefore, we request that the council change the property's comprehensive plan designation to mix employment to allow flexibility to develop the site with employment uses and maximize the city's investment in the new Orange Line.
Refresh my memory, is this property on the east side of 17th?
Yes, it is. And
existing buildings there?
Yes,
close
it
to
is.
McLaughlin? Okay.
Yep, exactly.
I've got it in my mind's eye.
All right.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you all.
Next three are 25, 26, and 27, Paul Van Orden, Ted Masico, and Noah Kleiman, and they'll be followed by 28, 30, and 31, Bob Wise, Allison Reynolds for Tim O'Leary, and David Red Thunder.
Okay, good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Start, Paul, you look like you're all fired up and ready there.
Members of Council, my name is Paul Van Orden. I've been a resident at 52 Northeast Fremont, just east of North Williams, for the last 19 years. In the summer of 2013, my involvement in my neighborhood changed radically as I found myself impacted by a land use decision made by City Council to upzone a series of lots for the two-term appointed City Design Commissioner Ben Kaiser. The lots are along North Williams and are bounded on the south by Northeast Ivy and the north by Northeast Fremont. These lots went from R1 zoning to the downtown central city zoning of RX. The directly impacted neighbors were left out of that process at the key point to legally have full standing at the Land Use Board of Appeals. I'm here today to preserve any legal right to appeal any change made by City Council to upzone this set of properties. Anything more than RH zoning, as recommended under the comp plan, at this late date in the game is not reasonable, is not based on the facts of the case, and it is out of character with all the community involvement to date. I understand the complexity and intentions of crafting community balance in the comp plan from numerous hours of volunteering at the Northeast Coalition of Neighbors on their executive board and their land use committee, and also from sitting on the Elliott Neighborhoods Land Use Committee. I'm in support of the logical downzoning recommendation at these lots from RX to RH, formed over a long duration in the comp plan process, now before you today. I'm not in support of RX, CM2, or CM3 at this location, or EX zoning if it survives through the mixed use zones process. I would respectfully ask our elected leaders to not support further upzoning momentum for a developer and his partners who sold council a bill of goods that they were going to build a dense housing environment when we're getting 14 units at this particular location.
Okay, thank you. So is your testimony in relation to the lot that we had a hearing about at council?
Yes, so those lots sold off other than the very corner that's going to go 85 to 95 feet, and they sold to a past planning commissioner, Rick Michelson, and he's working in collaboration with Ben Kaiser, and our understanding just from limited emails we've seen in the neighborhoods are that they're going to ask to not have the RH zoning that we've all worked to have applied to these properties in the comp plan, but rather to have something like RX or EX or CM3, and so I will not know until they actually testify, so I'm doing my best to testify based on limited emails of what they might be asking for in this process.
So you support RH, which is what the Planning Commission's proposal currently is?
Yes, most definitely.
Thank you for clarifying.
Good afternoon. Thank you for the opportunity to comment. My name is Ted Maseko, and I own the property at 23 Northeast Ivy. I've owned it for about 10 or 11 years. 23 Northeast Ivy is immediately adjacent to the southern half of the lot of land that Mr. Van Orden was just describing. And my comments, in large part, generally echo what Mr. Van Orden just said. Our properties actually, we share a common boundary line, so we're very similarly affected by what Mr. Van Orden was talking about. In general, my understanding was that the city had recommended an RH zoning level. An exception or a change was made to RX so that the northern half of this lot along Williams could be 80 feet high. My understanding is that that exception was made in large part with the promise of high density, a lot of housing units to accommodate the living requirements of the city. I understand that in reality, this 85-foot high, eight-story structure will only accommodate 14 high-end condominiums. So now that's occurring on the northern half of this lot, on the southern half of this lot, which for some time, my understanding, has been a parking lot that does not comply with local rules. That parking lot was recently closed, but that southern half, which has been a parking lot, is now immediately adjacent to my property, and I am asking, while this is a specific point about my property, about the neighborhood, I think it does relate to the larger picture of the culture and the character of the North Williams corridor, and I'm hoping that the city will continue with an RH zoning level and nothing higher than that, like a RX or some level of CM.
All right, thank you. Go ahead, please.
Hi. Thank you for having me out. I'm Noah Kleiman. I'm a nonprofit leader here in Portland. I started a nonprofit about 2 years ago called Secret Knowledge, which is about giving creative people in Portland, the people that make this place really great, the business skills that they need to thrive here, to succeed. Just recently finished doing our first annual conference on Saturday. It's quite a thing to see. One of the topics that that was brought up by attendees and by the people that I talk to every day in doing this work, it has certainly been second stage gentrification, a thing that I think we all are aware of is occurring in our city. And you know, I think this particular example that the men to my left have articulated of, you know, on the one hand, granting a variance in the height of a building, rightfully predicating it on there being high density housing taking place there, and then at what I would see as kind of a late stage, one could even describe that as being a takings at this stage, having that developer apply for a change in what the actual housing value of that, you know, in terms of the how many units and who they're targeted towards, seems to me that it's not approving that wouldn't be in keeping with what I know to be all of our goal to keep creative people living and thriving in the city. And so I'm asking you to keep this particular developer to their word and make sure that there's spaces for people to live at all the different levels of our housing stack. Yeah.
Sorry, what was I was trying to follow. What was the taking you were referring to?
Well, you know, when a developer is granted a change to the height of a building, I'm not an expert in housing, but I have worked for housing agencies.
No, I'm following you so
okay,
far.
Okay, cool. When they're granted that, and it's predicated, I believe in this case, Commissioner Novick was particular about wanting that to have an environmental impact by having there be a lot of people living in that space rather than just a few. And then down the line, you know, time passes and a return to council requests that suddenly we change the content of how many people are living in there. Approving that would mean that particular group of people somehow have managed to create the building, I have to imagine, of their dreams financially, while somehow sidestepping the process that our officials have actually laid out for them, such that it's in keeping with the use of that part of the city. The takings in that someone is taking advantage of what I would imagine to be a level of privilege. Yeah.
The example that sometimes comes up here is someone qualifies for a 10-year tax abatement, agrees to make 20% of the units affordable, and then at some point seeks to be relieved of that obligation. And one of the questions that we have to grapple with is, under what circumstances would we allow that to happen?
Sure.
And do we go retroactively to recapture the value that they got because they didn't provide the 10-year benefit that they committed to?
Right. I know you guys are going to figure out what's the best way to go.
I was just trying. You use taking in a slightly different way than sometimes we do, but after you explained it, I completely understand what you're saying, so thank you.
Awesome. Thank you for asking.
Thank you all very much.
Thank you.
Next three are 28, 30, and 31, Bob Wise, Allison Reynolds on behalf of Tim O'Leary, and David Red Thunder. And they'll be followed by 32, 33, 34, Jeff Geisler, Grant Williams, and Martha Johnston.
Okay, Bob, you're on.
Good afternoon. My name is Bob Wise, and I've been living here for about 25 years and was very pleased for about 10 years to chair and co-chair of the Sustainable Development Commission, where we pioneered a lot of interesting stuff, including the Climate Action Plan. I see Susan was over here somewhere. There she is. Hi. Anyway, I'm speaking today as a part of the group supporting the equity and inclusion provisions that were suggested earlier. And we came at this through a study group, a community practice study group associated with Cogan Owens Green now, a firm that's been doing city planning for about 40 years. So I want to make a few comments. First of all, we enthusiastically support these recommendations of the Planning and Sustainability Commission. Basically, to prevent and possibly reverse some of the discrimination and displacement that's taken place over the last 100 years. I want to say three things about this. First, this adds equity to the sustainability vision of Portland, which has been focused for the last two decades on the environment and the economy and sustainability, green enterprise, and maintaining the quality of the living environment in Portland. And I think this really sets Portland ahead of many cities in terms of this integration of these three factors. I'd like to encourage you to think of equity in a little different way than most people do. Equity on Wall Street is thought of as ownership. And so think about the kinds of things that can be done through public policy to help create community and local ownership of assets as a form of equity, not just access to the process of decision-making. And that comes through, I think, through thinking of my third point, that the city focus very closely on looking at their spending as investments that can be done in partnership with community-based and local organizations of all kinds, public, private, nonprofit, philanthropic. You know, you're working closely with the Native American Youth and Family Center. That's an example of the kind of investment that's going to have long-term benefits.
Thank you very much, Bob.
Bob, I have one question for you, since you have a long history in this work. What if the council determines that some of the equity planks of the anti-displacement coalition are good, sound policy, but the comp plan is the wrong place to put it, because by putting in the comp plan, it puts it at jeopardy of being tied up in a land use proceeding, since the comp plan is the guide for future land use decisions, not policy decisions of the council. Hearing a symphony. There's a symphony ringing in my ears. Do you have a thought on where that line is? Because we had a Portland plan that had very specific strategies and goals, and a good portion of our comp plan is written in general terms, and because we're required to balance competing, when we have a land use hearing, we're often required to balance competing or complementary policies. Where's the line for you in terms of going beyond a comprehensive plan and putting something in a comprehensive plan that then inadvertently becomes part of a land use process, which we may not want to have certain policies subject to?
Well, so I think the problem is serious enough. If you look at declining wages overall, displacement overall, a century of displacement, I think it's worth having it in several places, because I think otherwise it's the kind of thing that can be easily forgotten or run over in the process. And I think thinking carefully about which ones might be appropriate elsewhere is a critical ingredient. And I think the Planning and Sustainable Development Commission did that by leaving out some things that they didn't recommend.
Thank you very much.
Hello again. Allison Reynolds, this time speaking on behalf of Tim O'Leary, who was unable to be here today, another one of my firm's clients. We previously provided testimony on this issue on November 18th. Mr. O'Leary recently purchased property at 1403 and 1421 Southeast Stark Street. The property has a main building and an addition that was added in 1945. Both parts of the building have been used for commercial use since that time. The property is zoned R1, and the current commercial operations are legal non-conforming uses. Mr. O'Leary is separately going through the non-conforming situation review for his planned redevelopment of the site with neighborhood-scale commercial use. The Buckman Neighborhood Association Land Use Committee voted unanimously to support Mr. O'Leary's redevelopment plan. The current comp plan proposal will legalize the commercial uses at the main building only by changing its comprehensive plan designation to mixed-use urban center and zoning to commercial mixed-use 1, the smallest-scale mixed-use zone. The addition, which is part of the same structure, was not proposed for a comp plan change, and we are asking you to make that change today. Staff told us that this was initially a mistake and is supportive of a change for the whole building. The Buckman Neighborhood Association is supportive of commercial uses at the site, but we understand that they have concerns about changing the property's designation. Mr. O'Leary has no plans to change the small scale uses at the site, but wants to remove the onerous non-conforming use restrictions that make financing and insurance difficult. Split zoning the building makes any subsequent development needlessly complicated and is against city policy. The proposed CM1 zone has similar low density to the current R1 zoning and will preserve the neighborhood's existing character. In conclusion, we ask the council to apply a comprehensive plan designation of mixed-use urban center to the entire property. Thank you.
Okay, Okay, thank you.
I very much appreciate that you noted that the neighborhood has some concerns. It's rare that an advocate will tell us the other side as well, and it makes it much easier for me to understand. Thank you.
Yeah, and we've been doing a lot of work with the Neighborhood Association, and I don't know if any of their representatives will speak to this issue, but it's been an ongoing dialogue that I think will produce something good at least. So, thank you.
Thanks very much.
Mayor, can I ask a protocol question?
Sure.
Because we're going to, thank you very much. We're going to be hearing a lot more testimony beyond today and in the future. So if someone signs up and is not here, what is our rule in terms of who can testify on their behalf? So we've had a number of examples where someone wasn't able to be here and they've had an attorney as a representative. Do we extend the same courtesy to someone's spouse or neighbor or the designated person, advocate?
Good question. I think the answer is yes, because, again, we're talking about both big picture policy work here and specific site-specific zoning.
So we're not extending the courtesy just to a lawyer. We're saying if someone can't testify and their name comes up, they can designate someone to testify on their behalf.
Yes.
Okay. So we're equal level playing field.
Yeah. Yes. We want to make sure, and obviously, we certainly hope that all 100,000 parcels in the city don't have someone that want to show up and speak at the council hearing. But for those that do, we want to make sure that
people are willing to make the time.
We'll try. But people are bringing those in an obviously very organized way, and it's very helpful to us. And the staff is developing a matrix for us to be able to review. Okay, we got this request about that property, and this is the requested.
I just want to make sure that I'm fine with it, just as long as we're extending the courtesy to everybody.
Yep.
That if they don't have an attorney but have someone else who speaks for them, we're giving them the same opportunity.
Exactly.
The only challenge is that we've said that individuals have to speak up to speak. They can't have a single person signing up 10 people. So I'm a little concerned that one individual could be representing several people. We might want to think as we move along that if you testified once during a hearing that you don't get to testify again.
Meter that just so we can get to hear more people.
Good point. And just so that everybody knows, we'll be doing the next hearing the same way as this, with first come, first served, and not carrying on the list from today, so that you'll have to come and sign again. After that, I'm speaking because I'll be the president of the council, the mayor will be out of the country. And after that, we may change to a different system where we go more to a lottery, and or maybe if you've shown up twice and you haven't been able to speak, that you get in first on the next time, something like that. We really do want to make sure that everybody has an opportunity to speak and that we make it fair.
If someone's already signed up, why don't they? Our normal practice is they go to the top of the list, the next hearing.
We have not yet done that in terms of rolling people over to the next hearing, because we're moving around the city with those hearings in part to try to get closer to where people live. So we want to make sure that we don't subject them to a whole bunch of testimony about
the opposite side of town. Fair enough, because the next hearing is not here.
Yeah. Next hearing is at the Middleman Jewish Community Center, as a matter of fact. Okay, so who's next?
The next three are Jeff Giesler, Grant Williams, and Martha Johnston, 32, 33, and 34. And they'll be followed by Ann Surgeon, Rich Surgeon, and Ron Beck, 35, 36, 37.
Three out of three. Okay. What's that?
100,000 parcels.
That's 100,000 parcels. We hope we don't hear about them all.
There's a little bit of trivia.
Yeah.
I have no idea.
I am 2,500 people. anyway, I'm Jeff Geisler again from Hayden Island, High Noon neighborhood. I'm not going to talk about West Hayden Island because I trust you're going to do the right thing on that. But on East Hayden Island, we experienced a 2003 permit process that went into bankruptcy, which was known as Sal Pair Bay, came back without any neighborhood input whatsoever, and was converted from condos to apartments. So now we have 376 or 378 apartments going up, and Columbia Crossings, who also owns a lot of land, would like to imitate that. We had no new infrastructure, no new streets. The CRC died. So on the mixed-use zone that I see, I think we would like to have the CM1, so we have a limitation on height if there's new apartments or condos being built, and or serious input from the neighborhood before any approval of a permit is granted. Because we only have one road that leads to the east end of the island. It's Tomahawk Drive. and in the summertime, it's really one lane. So, you know, I approve of the zoning that's going on. The mixed use, I think, is always a great use of property. But we have a very narrow street and area out there, and we were not served very well when Salpair Bay went up, and then consequently we have Yacht Harbor. So I'd like to just bring that to your attention. Thank you.
Thank you.
Good evening. My name is Grant Williams, local resident, small business owner, and board member of the Humboldt Community Association. I'm representing myself and Ethan Knight today, who is my local, who is my business owner. I'm killing it, y'all. Who's my local business partner?
I came here recently and addressed Charlie as Mayor Katz, so you're doing better than
okay.
You are killing it.
Thanks, Commissioner Fish. I am testifying today in reference to two bordering properties at 650 North Alberta and 710 North Alberta, which border a CM2 zone on two sides. These properties are currently zoned R2.5A, and my proposal would extend the CM2 zone to include these properties. One of these properties houses my small business under a conditional use. The use of both addresses will be consistent with the use allowances of the CM2 zone. The current R2.5A zone limits my small business to capital to maintain the existing historic buildings, which I have no intention of developing. I have also submitted online testimony, which includes letters of support from the Humboldt Community Association, five neighboring business or homeowners, and seven small business owners. One of those I'd like to quote here. It is in my experience that this business is operated with the utmost professionalism and respect for its neighbors. I would be delighted to see it get the opportunity to continue to grow in its mission. You may debate that, depending on my testimony, as I debauched it, but that's it. Thank you for your service.
Right. What is your business? I didn't.
I own a small bed and breakfast, okay. So it really serves local travelers that are traveling on a budget, so it makes accommodation affordable in Portland. So room prices range around $35 a night.
Thanks. So.
Thank you very much. Yeah. Thank you. Welcome.
Hello. Thank you, Mayor Hales and members of the City Council. This is phase one of East Columbia Neighborhood Association testimony. You'll see the two maps in front of you. One is the aerial picture with the lot lines of the problematic areas that we're having. And map two is the wetlands that abound in our area. And that blue blob at the bottom of the wetlands here is a private mitigation for building the industrial area.
Put your name in the record. I'm sorry. Please.
This is Martha Johnston with East Columbia Neighborhood Association. Considerations of the change in circumstances since enactment of the industrial sanctuary designation in 1981 comp plan has had no development in 35 years. In 2011, as part of the Middle Columbia Corridor Airport Natural Resources Inventory, this area received substantial coverage of the environmental overlay zoning of the P protection and the C conservation. See those maps. The map shows the P and C overlay zones covering approximately one half of four of the properties, one third of one property, two thirds of one property, and all of one property. The extensive coverage of the P overlay zone is important for future development potential, as characterized in the zoning code website zone summaries. The environmental protection zone provides the highest level of protection to the most important resources and functional values. Development will be approved in the environmental protection zone only in rare and unusual circumstances. The environmental zoning appears to have taken the majority of this area out of potential development in the future. As such, any development, and particularly industrial development, with its large buildings and extensive paving associated with heavy truck traffic, would not be anticipated to be approved or occur in the majority of this area with the planned designation of IS, Industrial Sanctuary. The portion of the lots not covered by environmental zoning is where there are five houses with a total improvement value of $655,000. A reasonable expectation is that these homes outside the environmental zoning would be less likely to be developed for industrial uses due to the existing improvement values and relatively small acreage in the PNC zones available. We're out of land and out of time.
Okay, no, you've made it clear. Thank you very much. Mm-hmm. Thank you all.
Thank you.
Thank you.
The next three are Ann Surgeon, Rich Surgeon, and Ron Beck, 35, 36, and 37. And they'll be followed by Sally Beck, Dan Holland, and Eva Miller, 38, 39, and 40.
Good afternoon. Welcome.
Okay. Yes, I'm Ann Surgeon, and I'm continuing the dialogue of the East Columbia Neighborhood Association position of Phase 1. R20 zoning would match and be compatible with the zoning to the immediate north. R20 residential zoning would protect environmental resource values by not developing those areas and yet add a few additional new home sites concentrated in the area of Northeast Levee Road outside the P and C zones. In addition, there could also be the possibility of application by individual property owners for small plan development lots located outside the environmental zones. A plan development can result in a lot density closer to the development potential of their entire property. A buffer between industrial and residential use areas exists in the abutting industrial zone IG2H property to the south. Along the industrial property's northern boundary is a 50-foot-wide buffer strip zone IG2BH. The B buffer zone was a condition of approval of the industrial development and was enacted to serve as a buffer to reduce adverse effects between incompatible land use attributes such as noise, lights, and views. It is recognized that there is a need to maintain adequate planned land areas for future industrial growth. However, continuing to include this area in the inventory of acreage to fulfill future industrial need could be viewed as representing a false acreage number in that inventory. That is because the majority of the acreage is covered by undevelopable environmental zones, and except for one smaller lot, the remaining acreage is already developed with housing, significantly reducing the conversion to industrial land use.
Thank you.
Thank you
very much.
The map you have shows red and black dots and yellow dots. Those right. represent houses and barns. I'm Richard Surgeon. I brought these pictures to show you that the existing housing on Levee Road and the development allowed recently within 400 feet of my property. The properties in question consist of beautiful homes, as you see. I bought my property 35 years ago. I've lived there 45 years on that property with the intent to live there the rest of my life and to develop someday for my retirement. My property abuts my neighbor's R20 zoning. I love the families of deer that live in the area, have lived there for decades, not to mention coyotes, foxes, immigrating birds, etc. Industry would wipe them out of the area. The city is allowing for the tearing down of old Portland homes to get more housing in the same space and try to meet their housing goals. Doesn't this make sense to allow us to improve our neighborhood livability, thus increasing housing for the Portland area while protecting the city's environmental zones? I paid your fees for a preliminary hearing in 2006 to see if I can build just two homes, only to be shot down because of all the zone changes put on my property after I bought it, without any financial compensation, I might add. It's not fair that the city council restrict us homeowners because they want industrial land in their inventory, especially when it can never be used as such because of the wetlands, environmental overlays, animal habitat, and roads that prohibit industrial access. In conclusion, we, the homeowners, request this comprehensive plan change not to be approved and allow for future R20 zoning for Portland's needs for more housing. It's time and long overdue to this change. It's time and long overdue to change this small part of the current comp plan since it is already a residential neighborhood. Thank you for your consideration.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Welcome.
Thank you for the opportunity. Pardon, I'm having a back spasm, so I may talk a little weird. But my name is Ron Beck, and my wife and I own a property on Levy Road. Northeast Levy Road is 2 blocks long. The north end of it touches Columbia Edgewater Golf Course. It's kind of in the backwaters down there. Well, we're surrounded by wetlands and single-family dwellings. And I'm only going to talk about one thing. In 2011, Gunderson versus the City of Portland decided that you can't have an environmental overlay on a property and at the same time have an industrial overlay on the same property. And it was supported by the Oregon Supreme Court. Now, what they're proposing on our properties, the Levy Road Gang, is to have not only wetlands and protected zones, but also industrial sanctuaries on the same properties. And down in that area makes no sense. It's all residences and wetlands. I'll read as far as I can here, and then I'll get cut off, and that's fine. The industrial property owners within the airport futures area demanded in hearing testimony that the proposed environmental zoning overlay zones be removed from their properties prior to the comprehensive plan and zoning map amendments being adopted. The airport futures plan and zoning changes were adopted soon after in April 2011. The request by industrial landowners for the city to remove the environmental overlay zones was followed and complied with for all non-governmental industrial lands except the subject Northeast Levy Road properties. Within the airport futures area, the Northeast Levy Road industrial sanctuary properties were the only privately owned properties in the industrial lands inventory that had environmental restrictions placed on them. No analysis of the developable industrial acreage lost due to the environmental zoning was ever done in blatant disregard of the Gunderson versus City of Portland requirements. Since the City of Portland chose not to comply with the requirements to determine the amount of acreages lost and the resulting impact on the industrial lands inventories as a result of the environmental overlay zones mapped on the Levy Road properties, then we must conclude that the city never intended to actually ensure that the properties were available for later industrial development. The city cannot have it both ways, count the properties in the industrial inventory and also apply environmental zoning on the same properties. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you very much. It's very clear. Thank you.
The next three are Sally Beck, Dan Holland, and Eva Miller, 38, 39, and 40. And they'll be followed by Catherine Christensen, Keith Leiden, and Lightning, 41, 42, and 43.
Okay. Whoever would like to be first, go ahead.
Mayor Hales, commissioners, my name is Sally Beck, and I've owned property in the East Columbia neighborhood for 25 years. I'm here to speak about the less than honest dealings that have taken place by the Bureau of Planning and Sustainability. The comp plan proposed has our property and that of our neighbors on Northeast Levy Road listed as both industrial sanctuary and it having major environmental overlays of protection and conservation. How can this be? It would seem that both are mutually exclusive. No other privately owned industrial plan designated properties except these six parcels received environmental overlay zoning at the conclusion of the airport futures plan in 2011. Because in doing so, they would be in violation of Gunderson versus City of Portland and that decision. As the Oregon Supreme Court required an environmental analysis of each property that was never done, the City of Portland is in non-compliance and puts small landowners like me in a bad situation. It is unfortunate with the resources available to the Planning and Sustainability Bureau that they cannot find a way to fulfill their obligations to Metro and the state of Oregon without subjecting small individual property owners to resort to litigation or suffer under unfair and unrealistic zoning overlays and unfounded suitability for future industrial growth. In conclusion, the industrial sanctuary comprehensive plan designation for the subject properties should be removed.
Thank you. Welcome.
Good afternoon, Dr. Daniel Holland. I'm representing the East Portland Eye Clinic as well as our patients. The East Portland Eye Clinic was established in 1962 on the corner of Southeast 122nd and Gleason Streets, and we've currently moved to a location on 108th and Southeast Stark in 1989. We've grown from a two-doctor practice to now 10 doctors with adding another one next month. And we currently see over 200 patients a day at our Stark location. Our clientele range from the very young to the very old. I was the first pediatric ophthalmologist on the east side of Portland. We provide services from anything from custom cataract surgery to LASIK, as well as services for Care Oregon, Family Care, Medicare, and discounted services to the uninsured. Originally known as the East Portland Eye Clinic, we're now part of iHealth Northwest, serving the Portland metro area. As we've grown, our parking has become a major problem, and with many of our patients having to park on the street, on the neighborhood side streets, as well as our employees, and we also have a shortage of disabled parking spaces. And just recently, the lot behind us became available, and we made a purchase offer in hopes of adding additional parking. We believe this would not only alleviate the congestion in the neighborhood, but also provide safer access to the clinic for our patients, as well as safer exiting and entering from the side streets rather than the busy Stark Street. So in order to accomplish this, we're asking that the R2.5 zoning be changed on the lot at 412th and Southeast 108th, and have that be included in the mixed-use civic corridor zoning in the comprehensive growth plan. It's been a pleasure serving the people of East Portland, and we would like to continue to grow as our patient base ages and our population grows.
Doctor, I have a question. First of all, it's been a pleasure being one of your patients. I've had services at your clinic. Have you submitted something in writing that documents what you've just told us?
I plan to. I have it all written out and have photographs and
yeah, because this is your, I mean, we have staff taking notes, but this is a very, you have like a surgical ask. You're asking, so if we have something that backs it up, and I am, and I don't, when I visited, I don't remember having any difficulty with parking. So just remind me again, we're
with Dr. Kim over at 108th and Stark. We have various doctors coming in and out. Our busiest days are probably Mondays and Thursdays. We used to provide just general eye care, but now we have retina surgery. Right. We have glaucoma, and there's a lot of different patients coming in. We're probably the biggest provider of eye care, I believe.
Well, in fact,
Portland.
My understanding is when OHSU wants to have a patient receive a glaucoma test, they send them to your clinic. And
so we often exchange patients with OHSU.
So if I understand the pattern that you're recommending, right now the recommended zoning would be mixed use on Stark, but only one parcel deep. And you're saying your plans would be benefited by making it two parcels deep.
Correct.
And the parcel immediately to the east of you is already in that mixed use designation.
Yes, sir. That's our parking lot.
Yeah.
And
okay.
We'd just like to extend it behind the building there.
Okay,
honestly,
I
think the corridor could be widened a bit as things continue to grow and commerce continues to develop along Stark Street there.
Right. Yeah, you're right up the street from the community center and so on.
There is a house on that lot. We'd be more than happy to move that house, donate it, whatever it takes to help the housing situation in our neighborhood.
Okay. Have you talked with the Neighborhood Association and Business District?
We have contacted a few of the neighbors, many of which are our actual patients. We've also talked to some of the local businesses, such as Sailor's Country Kitchen and Elmer's, and they're all in support. And mostly we have the support from the nursing homes across the street with Adventist Healthcare, as they have to navigate our parking lot, dropping off elderly patients in wheelchairs and whatnot, and it's a bit of a congested situation right now.
So you should probably contact the Hazelwood Neighborhood Association. Arlene Kimura is the chair, and they probably would be very supportive, but I always like to know that the Neighborhood Association has been contacted.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Yes, ma'am.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. Thank you for the opportunity. I'm Eva Miller. I have some slides. I'm not really sure how to make that work.
Carla will help you.
Thanks, Carla. Carla's helped me already today.
Helps us all.
All right. I'm Eva Miller, and I live with my husband, Daniel Peterson, at 4018 Southeast 37th Avenue in the Creston Kenilworth neighborhood on the Kenilworth side. We bought our small house in 2003, not as an alternative to the stock market, just to live in. And our home is zoned R5, but this conflicts with the proposed R1 zoning in the comprehensive plan. Facing rezoning made me look more closely at what sense there may be in the plan, and I discovered that Kenilworth already has many of the qualities city planners want throughout our city. Portland could learn lessons from us. We have income diversity. People are not wealthy in Kenilworth. We have a high percentage of renters here. There are older apartments, condos, multiplexes, and rental houses on nearly every block, alongside modest homes like ours. On our street, there are also new condos and apartments, plus an eco-village, it's really cool, that evolved from existing apartments. So in Kenilworth, we already have high density. We are doing our part, but other residential areas are not. I don't see many zoning changes in Alameda, Irvington, Laurelhurst, Mount Tabor, or Eastmoreland, for example, wealthy neighborhoods. Consciously or not, Portland's planning looks like economic discrimination. Density goals should be equitable. Normally, my husband and I take our civic duty to heart. We defend the greater good. Like when we painted our house, we paid thousands more for lead abatement. People said we were suckers for obeying the law. When I met my husband, he owned a house in the Brooklyn neighborhood that we now rent for a fair price, about $1,000 a month to a couple who bike to their jobs at a grocery store. Again, people say we're suckers for not illegally listing the place on Airbnb. We give to local causes, we rescue stray cats, we vote our conscience. But I haven't felt like a sucker until now. If you extract even more density from Kenilworth, the few houses near us will soon sell, given market conditions. Rezoning raises our taxes and surrounds us with a solid canyon of multi-tenant construction we'll be forced to sell to, not to a person, but to a developer who will put our home in a landfill. Please reconsider the proposed zoning area review changes for Crest and Kenilworth until more neighborhoods in Portland offer the housing density and options that we do right now. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Next three are Catherine Christensen, Keith Leiden, and Mr. Lightning, 41, 42, and 43. And they'll be followed by Jim Landbenthal, John Loff, and Terry Dillinskin Dublinski Milton, 45, 6, and 7.
Welcome.
Thank you. Thank you for the opportunity. My name is Catherine Christensen, and I live in the Multnomah neighborhood. In reading the 2035 comp plan, I see some issues that affect our already congested Southwest Portland streets. I'm a bike commuter and find Portland roads dangerous, and in adding more cars and buses, that will make them only worse. The increased density planning for our neighborhood and the lack of infrastructure to support it is concerning. Last spring, I helped write our neighborhood's recommendations to improve Capitol Highway. Sadly, the funding disappeared. Our Capitol Highway is misunderstood. Along the one-mile stretch from Barber to Multnomah Village, it is one lane in each direction with no shoulder and large ditches to handle the water runoff. It's a nightmare for pedestrians and bikers. As Capitol Highway enters Multnomah Village, it remains one lane and becomes one way going north, with angled parked cars using the one lane to enter and exit parking spots. During the many high traffic hours, the throughput can easily be less than 10 cars a minute, with busy cross streets and many pedestrian crosswalks resulting in large line of traffic backup. TriMet buses bring our traffic to a stop. Multnomah Village is a vibrant downtown community along Capitol Highway. However, there are few jobs and no grocery stores. Most everyone is forced to use a car to get to work and run most errands due to poor bicycling conditions and limited bus service. Building high-rise apartment complexes with little off-street parking along Capitol Highway or anywhere within our neighborhood is not sustainable for apartment dwellers, those who frequent the downtown businesses, or our neighboring homes. Increasing the housing density in Multnomah Village will only increase the congestion in our small town. Many roads aren't even paved in the area. There are no high-volume alternate routes. I signed the three letters that Multnomah neighborhood prepared and submitted for record. I support what was stated in those letters. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Catherine, can I just jump in? On that stretch of Capitol Highway, I wanted you to know that
We're going to be proposing a 10 cent a gallon gas tax go to the ballot in May, at least I hope we are, and in sort of our straw man plan for how to spend that money, PBOT included $3 million towards building a sidewalk along that stretch of Capitol Highway. That wouldn't be quite enough, but I've actually talked to legislators representing that area about making up the difference. So I am hopeful that we get a sidewalk along that stretch sometime in the next few years.
Hopefully that budget will stay with the project.
Welcome. Hi, Keith.
Hello. I'm Keith Lydon. I'm a Southwest resident. I have a number of comments about the comprehensive plan, primarily about the TSP. First, on the comprehensive plan, I think the overall policy direction looks really good to me.